Part 1. The Death of Berengaria Caswell. Supposed murder of another factory girl. On a sunny April afternoon in 1850, in the coastal town of Saco, Maine, young Osgood Stevens made a gruesome discovery. Helping his neighbor clear a clogged brook, the 14-year-old boy, with great effort, turned over a wooden plank that had become wedged in the culvert that ran beneath Storer Street. Much to his horror, he discovered tied to the plank the icy, rat-chewed remains of a young woman. A crowd gathered as Osgood's neighbors pulled the body from the water and carefully placed it on the ground. Someone ran for the constable and the coroner. The shocking news spread fast, and more people, on their way back to work after their midday meals, arrived to gaze at the victim. Saco was a growing town with a recent rise in crime, but until now, murder had been unheard of there. The weather reflected the mood of concern. By mid-afternoon, the skies had darkened, and the mild spring day had become wintry. The coroner called for an investigation, and the constable quickly convened an inquest jury, appointing several of the adult men who had gathered to watch this unexpected and lurid event. Despite the approaching snow, the jury members began their threefold duty: to determine who the victim was, how she died, and at whose hand. With the weather turning and the crowd pressing, Constable James J. Wiggins moved the body to the nearby barn of Nathaniel Brooks. Here, the jurors could begin their solemn task. The victim rested on a whitewashed plank, 6 feet long, to which someone had tied her at the ankles and neck. Her hands had been bound so tightly that the cotton rag used to secure them left indentations on her wrists. She was scantily clad, wearing blue stockings, newly footed, a light shift, a nightcap, and a child's checked calico apron tied over her face in turban form. Coroner Thomas P. Tufts called Dr. Edwin Hall, a trained physician and surgeon with a Main Street office, to the scene. As the day's light was fading, Hall gave the body a preliminary examination. He ruled out suicide and accident. This woman, he concluded, had obviously come to her death at the hand of another. The evidence indicated that she had recently been pregnant and had died as a consequence of abortion. The inquest jury suspected that the victim of this murder, for death during abortion was considered murder, was likely one of the many factory girls at work in the nearby textile mills. And as frequent newspaper stories and numerous true crime accounts made clear, it was not unlikely for a factory girl to die in just this way. With the short examination concluded in the failing light, the inquest jury knew how, but they did not yet know the answer to the twin questions of who. The snow increased to an April blizzard and darkness fell. By the spring of 1850, textile mills had stimulated tremendous growth in Saco and its neighbor across the river, Biddeford. The mills brought economic prosperity, a building boom, and a rapid rise in population, all of which changed Saco from a rural agricultural hamlet to a burgeoning city. As the populace grew and shifted, moving from one town to another as opportunity called, residents found that they no longer knew their neighbors, and an unidentified dead body in an icy stream epitomized the worries and fears these changing times encompassed. What seemed a straightforward story about a murdered girl became a much more complicated tale that brought into question the very foundation of Saco's economic success and that of other New England towns: the labor of the young women in the textile factories. This one death generated many stories found in newspapers across New England, court records, and two short novels, cheap pamphlet-length fiction that used the local Saco tragedy to warn a wider audience of the dangers inherent in mid-19th century urban life. At first glance, the story of the body in the brook appeared to be the familiar one of an innocent girl who fell victim to a cruel and cunning criminal. Most readers saw this event through the murder lens, a familiar format featuring a passive victim and an active aggressor. The moral of this story was clear. young girls could best be protected at home, away from the temptations and dangers of factory life.